Hi, everybody, and thank you for participating in this call. We have on the line Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, and he's joined by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Jason Weller, and they're going to be talking about new investments in water conservation and resilience across drought-stricken states. Reporters, if you'd like to ask a question, please let us know by pressing star 1. Let's turn it over to the Secretary.
Susan, thank you very much, and thanks to all who are on the call today, and special thanks to Chief Weller and his team at NRCS for the opportunity to make this announcement today. Today we are announcing the providing of $21 million to 8 states across the U.S., California, Kansas, Idaho, Nevada, Oklahoma, Oregon, Texas, and Utah. These are states that have portions of their state or the entirety of their state as drought-stricken, either as D3 or D4 states and areas on our drought monitor. These resources, the $21 million, is going to be made available with a specific focus on targeted conservation practices that we believe will assist producers in those states to deal with the difficult times they face in light of the drought. Resources will be used from this money for prescribed grazing approaches, livestock watering facilities, cover crops, nutrient management opportunities, as well as more efficient and improved irrigation systems. This investment is a continuation of the investment that the Obama administration has been making in conservation, now at record levels, over 400 million acres involved in conservation practices, working collaboratively with a 500,000 producers and owners of property around the United States. We're beginning to see improved soil health and water quality, reduced runoff, reduced greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, while also improving habitat for threatened and endangered species. This announcement that we make today of $21 million to 8 states is in line with a series of announcements that we've made over the course of the last 30 days or so. $6.5 million to the Ocala Aquifer, announcing the second round of the Regional Conservation Partnership. In the first round, $84 million was provided to 35 projects that will help to leverage up to $190 million of conservation activity that will be focused on scarce water resources, water quality, and water quantity. This money is also in addition to the resources that we have been providing the state of California beginning last year as it deals with a long-term drought, now over $27 million invested in that individual state, over 2,000 producers impacted and affected. We're seeing a significant amount of those resources being used for irrigation efficiencies. In fact, over the last 2 to 3 years, our investments have exceeded $1.5 billion. Over $638 million invested in irrigation efficiencies, $481 million in soil health efforts, and $410 million in providing assistance and help to the livestock industry. Jason and his team at NRCS have been focused on better water usage, better water quality, better soil, and healthier soil, which ultimately will result in more productive and profitable operations, notwithstanding the challenges that Mother Nature provides. It will also help to improve the local economy because these resources also help to create and support jobs in rural America. So excited about this opportunity to try to provide additional help and assistance. And with that, I'll be happy to turn it over to Jason if he has a few comments, and then we'll answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. You very effectively outlined the overall portfolio of investments we've made across the landscape to address water scarcity, but also improving the resilience of working landscapes. And really, this is in testament to the locally led approach that NRCS takes. We celebrated our 80th anniversary last month on April 27th in 1935, when President Roosevelt created the Soil Conservation Service with the goal of focus on working at the local level, starting with the individual farmers and ranchers. And because of that locally led approach, because we work at the county level and at the township and farm level, we can then really respond to what's needed most. And so since 2012, in response to the very severe drought conditions, particularly the west and central southern plains have experienced over the last 2 to 3 years, we have responded to the needs of those communities and to those landowners. And in partnership with them, we have invested in an array of tools to help increase their efficiency and their use of water when they have access to water, whether it's for surface or groundwater, so we can be, help them be as productive for every acre inch they use. They can maintain and even perhaps even increase yield, but then also helping pasture and rangelands better withstand drought, better withstand invasive weeds and other brush that's coming in and changing the quality of those rangelands. And so the extra money we're announcing today, the $21 million in financial assistance and technical assistance, is going to be targeted to the most stricken drought areas in those eight states that you outlined. And we're going to have a 30-day open period. We're going to ask folks to come in if they would like assistance in these exceptional extreme drought areas of those states. Please apply for additional assistance. This is on top of the level of investment NRCS has already made in those states. And we're very anxious to get this money out in the field and deployed this summer so we can help producers better withstand the very dry conditions they're now experiencing.
Okay, Susan, with that, I'd be happy to respond to any questions that either Jason or I can answer.
All right. Reporters, if you'd like to ask a question, please let us know by pressing star 1 on your touch-tone pad. Let's go to the High Plains Journal, Larry Dreiling.
Hi, Susan, and thank you, Secretary Vilsack, and to the chief as well. I want to ask a specific question. Now, these are targeted specifically to D3 and D4 areas. It's not targeted towards states as far as this funding is concerned. Am I correct?
Well, it's... It happens to be targeted to the D3, D4 areas, but those areas happen to be in eight states, which I listed at the beginning of this: California, Kansas, Idaho, Nevada, Oklahoma, Oregon, Texas, and Utah.
Let's continue with our reporters on the line from AP, Ellen Nickmeyer.
Hi there. I was just wondering if any of this money would be used to fallow acreage rather than have it planted because of the drought?
No, the funds are not to fallow land. In cases like, for example, California, we're aware the producers have already very substantially fallowed land. But where they have fallowed fields, what we can use with this money is actually come in and help in some cases where they're going to have access to water to help establish cover crops and to protect those fallowed fields so that when it does rain again or the winds blow, you protect the soil resources. But these dollars are not specifically to fallow fields.
And to put a finer point on this, in terms of cover crops, we've been able to fund and finance about 3.7 million acres of cover crop activity since 2012. And obviously,
sorry, could you say that again, that figure?
3.7 million acres.
Okay.
All right, and let's continue with our callers on the line. Dan Looker with Successful Farming Magazine. Dan.
Hello. I just had two quick questions. One, where are the funds for this program coming from? What USDA program or conservation program? And also, I wondered if I could go slightly off topic to ask if USDA has yet decided how to respond to a request made last March by several groups that one-third of the Conservation Reserve Program be devoted to the Continuous Conservation Reserve Program sign-up. And I realize that FSA administers that, but I think NRCS helps with the technical side of it. So those are my two questions.
Yeah, I think we'll hold off on the CRP question for a later day. We'll be making an announcement on CRP later in the spring, both as to continuous and as to the overall program. Given the fact that we're seeing congressionally directive reduced acreage, we obviously have made a significant commitment to continuous acres and programs from pollinators to safe acres to habitat, upland bird habitat. A variety of other ways of providing support and help, and that's obviously going to continue. I would say that this particular announcement we're making today, that the resources are coming from our EQIP program.
All right, let's continue with reporters on the line. Tiffany Stecker with Greenwire. Tiffany.
Thanks for taking my question. I'm wondering if there's been an analysis of how much investments in conservation through EQIP or other conservation programs save down the line in crop insurance indemnities or emergency aid to farmers in drought?
Well, let me say that the assessment that we do, that I'm familiar with, is not so much in that space, but in the area of soil erosion that's been prevented, nitrogen and phosphorus that it no longer is getting into the rivers and streams as it once did. And it's fairly clear that we are saving a significant amount of soil erosion as a result of the activity that's now in over 400 million acres that has resulted in over 3 billion pounds of nitrogen being avoided going into our rivers and streams and over 700 million pounds of phosphorus. Tons and tons. I think it's like 270 million tons of soil have been avoided erosion as a result of the conservation practices just in the last several years at NRCS.
And one thing I would also add, Secretary, is that just in terms of perhaps not crop insurance payment indemnity reduction, but at least in water conservation benefits. So you mentioned the Ogallala Aquifer and our efforts to protect that aquifer. Between 2009 and 2012, we had a targeted approach, this initiative where we invested in water conservation activities to help protect the groundwater resources in the Ogallala region. And we estimate that because of those investments, we have saved, that's just over that three-year period, 1.5 million acre-feet, which is enough water to actually provide annual water supply for over 3.3 million homes. So these programs can have a very substantial benefit to not only producers, but also the communities in which they live.
Our next call comes from Lindsay Wise from the Kansas City Star. Lindsay.
Hi. Thanks for talking to us today. My question is, I understand that there are many, many more applications for EQIP and conservation funds than can be funded. And I know that some of these conservation funds were cut in the last farm bill, sequestration. Do you guys feel that you have adequate funding to address the need, which, you know, is obviously very intense right now in this part of the country?
Let me try to respond to that in a couple of different ways. I think you have to be careful about the notion of cuts in terms of comparing whether or not resources were increased or decreased in real terms or whether they were increased or decreased in terms of what was originally proposed and passed by Congress in the Farm Bill. That sometimes can create some confusion. There is no question that sequester is a policy that is flawed, which is why the President's budget has been very clear about the necessity of essentially eliminating sequester, and he has also been quite clear that that you just can't simply increase defense spending without increasing correspondingly non-defense spending. I would say that if you ask Chief Weller whether he has enough resources, I'm pretty sure he's going to tell you that he doesn't. But I would say two things. One, you want to make sure that the amount of resource that you have can be efficiently and adequately and appropriately utilized, which means that you have to do a good job of matching up the resources that are available with the ability to provide technical assistance and the ability to actually have folks in the field to make sure that those resources are being spent wisely. And I think in the past we've seen a significant increase in funding without a corresponding increase in staffing, which has created challenges for the NRCS staff. So we're trying to right-size both the amount of money and the personnel. Secondly, given the reality of Congress that has been reluctant to significantly increase our overall budget, and in fact our operating budget is roughly equivalent to what it was when I became Secretary, it is now important for us to look for opportunities to leverage these resources, which is why we're excited about the reaction we've gotten from the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, which is really, in effect, helping us expand and leverage the resources that we have more effectively, at least dollar for dollar, if not more. That's why the $84 million that was invested in the first round in water quality initiatives, 35 projects, will actually result in probably $190 million of activity. So, you know, I think you have to be careful about sort of trying to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges here. I think the bottom line is, we're going to use the resources that Congress provides. We're going to make sure that we have the staff to provide the technical assistance and to work with other organizations and entities to leverage our resources as efficiently and effectively as possible to do as much conservation work as we can with the resources we have.
Up next, Mary Claire Jalinick from AP, followed by Jackie Fatko with Feedstuff. Mary Claire.
Hi, and I apologize for going off topic, but I just wanted to see if you had a reaction to the COOL ruling from WTO today. Is there a way the administration can address this, or does it have to be Congress?
I don't know how many times you guys can ask this question. To be honest with you, I'm getting a little tired of answering it. You know, the county of origin labeling was passed to help consumers make informed purchase decisions. WTO has confirmed that we have, in essence, the right to provide county of origin requirements, but they basically confirmed a previous ruling that the requirements as written in the statute by Congress are not consistent with WTO obligations. And as I've said on multiple occasions, Congress has got to fix this problem. They either have to repeal COOL or they have to modify it and amend it to create some sort of generic label. It's up to Congress to figure out what to do. We have tried several ways to do this, and each time WTO has indicated that we haven't quite figured out how to do it right, so Congress is going to have to respond.
Up next, from Feedstuff, Jackie Fodka. Jackie.
You mentioned that some of the money could be used to reestablish some of the land for range for ranchers. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about what types of things can be done to enhance that, to make them more drought tolerant for those who are ranching or using it as pastures?
Well, I'm going to take a sort of a 50,000 foot level of this, and then Jason can certainly amplify it. One of the things that we are focusing on is making sure that the grazing of activity is actually consistent with preserving as much resource as we possibly can in terms of water and soil. That's why rotational grazing, prescribed grazing, is a strategy that we want to see more operators utilize in order to get the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak, and that's one way in which we can target conservation practices to encourage that type of activity.
Okay. So in addition to the practices the Secretary outlined, such as prescribed grazing, we also help put in place other infrastructure practices to help support a more intensive grazing approach, so watering facilities, access control, different fencing structures that can help protect riparian areas, so sensitive stream areas and river areas where you don't necessarily want to have the livestock getting down to impacting those resources, but you still need to be able to provide then water, obviously, for the livestock. You need to be able to provide the operator those kind of alternatives on their operation. But in terms of just coming back to the prescribed grazing practices, by having the incorrect stocking rates, you're not going to be overstressing the pasture and the vegetative resources that are there on the land, which in the end can also overall improve the ability of that range, that pasture, to resist invasive weeds or other woody brush that can come in, which ultimately reduces the value of that range area for livestock, for grazing purposes. But also, a lot of those invasives are really water thirsty, so they can soak up the groundwater, ultimately drowning out or soaking up the water, literally taking away your springs and your other sources of water for your livestock. And also then, because you have more forage and vegetative cover on your range, you're going to help keep your soils cooler, protected from the solar radiation, which in the end will help those soils better withstand higher temperatures and hold, increase the water holding capacities of those soils. So really it's about overall helping those range and pasture operators be more resilient to when it droughts, dry conditions, but also when it does rain again, that their ability then to restock and to have resilient and successful operations, these practices really help them over the long term.
Before we close that up, I want to ask, can you talk about how private-public partnerships like the Region Conservation Partnership Program can help alleviate the long-term impacts of drought?
Well, I think it's twofold. One is that those partnerships leverage not only the dollars that USDA can provide through the EQIP program and the CSP program, but they can also leverage the personnel. We often work with organizations like Ducks Unlimited or Pheasants Forever or the Nature Conservancy, and they can provide assistance and help in terms of technical assistance, sort of stretching our staff resources effectively as well. So the bottom line is by leveraging resources and personnel, we can actually do more work and get more work done. And it's fairly clear from drought to endangered and threatened species to the need for agriculture to respond to a changing climate to just the general conservation practices that are important to preserving the productivity of American agriculture NRCS plays an incredibly important role in leveraging and connecting personnel and resources to conservation practices, and then working, I think, with a great deal of credibility out in the field with producers. They trust NRCS. They appreciate the work that NRCS does, and I think that's why we're seeing a record amount of activity now, because the credibility of NRCS is high, and we're figuring out creative ways to use our resources.
Thank you very much for joining us for our call. Of course, we had Secretary Vilsack and Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Jason Weller. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call, and that concludes our call for now.